12.
Welcome back, episode 3, season 2. You know what time it is. My name is Lunkwa Sonia, and I am back in my bag again. The series continues. Great people. New York, we continuing to be what New York is, which is why sitting to my very right, we'll talk about the mutual connection in a bit, but I should let you know that if you don't know her name now, by the summer you will. The lovely Tommy Versailles joins me. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Unkwa. I appreciate you.
And I gotta triple check that I said that right.
Yes, you did. Tommy Versailles, right?
Yes.
Cool, yeah.
Because Alyssa will laugh at this from 2 weeks ago, but it took me, her name is easy, but it took me 3 takes to get her name right.
I don't think it is easy. You know why I say that? Because, like, it's fine. I've done shows. Like, I did this, like, showcase thing. And the guy was like, how do you pronounce your name? And I was like, Tommy Versailles, like, Versailles. And he was like, okay, I got it. And I get on the stage, and he was like, Tommy Versailles, or something wild like that. And I was like,
was like Versailles or something like that?
It was something wild. Like, like that's actually giving him credit, like, because it was just so bad. Like, I turned, like, sir, like, did we not have this conversation like 5 minutes ago? Like, damn. Or like when I say it on stage, people's faces are like, and I'm like, oh damn, so nobody took U.S. history. Like, nobody took history class. Am I the only one who took history class? Like, okay, that's fine.
But remember, artists are the uneducated ones. Speaking of education, the reason how Tommy and I know each other is because I went to school with my friend Olivia Roach, also officially known as Livy. Shout out to you. And she said, hey, my friend is doing this event. You should come through. I'm like, you know what? It's after church. For once, I don't have anything to do. I pulled in a couple of my friends, and I walk. I see her. Everything's all well and good. Shout out to Poetic Adulthood.
Woo!
And then I look up, and I'm like, wait, Tommy, so where is he at? And she goes, she is right over there. And I said, wait, what?
It me, hello.
And then she walked up. My boy Ant was on the guitar, and I was like, this world is too small. But now this is amazing.
The world is so, so small. Like, I can't even begin, like, connections.
So first off, like I mentioned, she does have a project that is set to release in the coming months. You showed us a few songs from that project, but I would like to know how it all started for you.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think that I really don't remember when I made the decision to be like, oh, like, I need to record an EP. I do. I lied. I'm sorry. So one of my very dear friends, Teddy, Mr. Belafonte, he is the producer of the songs that I have out on Spotify, Apple Music, and all that stuff right now. Work It Out, City Lights, and Indica. I think after we finished, that was for a compilation project that he's been working on. And you know, he's a producer, is going to work with a bunch of artists. He was like, you should be on this with me. Once that was done, he was like, yo, we need to record an EP. And I was like, all right, cool. He sent me, like, 2 songs, and it took me so long to even, like, start them. Like, I don't know. And it kind of, like, sprung out from there. Like, I had a song, Can't Be Friends. That's the oldest song on the EP. I wrote that years and years ago. I said it like it's, like, 10 years. It's, like, maybe, like, 4 or 5. But that song, I was like, oh, I need to do, like, an updated version of this. Because, like, people keep listening to the version on SoundCloud, and it makes me cringe because that's, like, a super demo version where, like,
right.
Yeah, like, Ant sent me, like, a iPhone recorded, like, version of his guitars. And I went to a studio, and a guy just laid it over. And, like, yeah, it turned out really cool, and people love that version. But I'm like, look, you have to wait for the mastered version. Like, so yeah, I think it, like, built up from there. And I kind of wrote the songs, like, the 6 songs that are on it, I wrote them at different times, and then it all kind of came together. But I knew from the get-go that I wanted to make this EP that was like part production, like in studio engineering and stuff like that, digitally. That's what I was looking for. Digitally produce and have a live band with it. Like, I knew that that was a sound I was trying to achieve. So even if the songs weren't written, like, all the things that I wrote were based in that idea of, like, I need to combine these two things. And it's not like it's unheard of, you know? But I feel like that's near and dear to my heart. So I wanted to incorporate that. And the musicians I have are amazing. Like, Ant is on the EP, and he's fantastic.
Yes. So I feel like sometimes people don't understand why having a live band is so significant. I mean, we're in a day and age where you have these phenomenal producers who create these things off one keyboard and a bunch of sounds. But what is the big difference for you between having a brilliantly produced piece of work for you to go over and having a band to back you?
I think for me, it's that, like, just watching the process is amazing. Like, watching how this band comes together and just creates, like, wild things. Like, the ending of You Don't Care, which is one of the songs on my EP, is this, like, conglomeration of all these art. Like, this was, like, the last song that we had to record, and it was, like, this long stretch of things. And I was finally like, this is it, guys. Like, and they turned up, and it was like a feeling that I feel like I would not have gotten. Not to take away from producers at all. They have a phenomenal, thankless gift. Like, yeah. You know, it's one of those things where they work in the background, and now producers are getting like heavy, heavy, heavy credit, which is so deserved to them. But I just live live feeling. I grew up, you know, in the church, of course, you know, singing in the choir, but like, so church bands were like really, really, really like, mm-hmm. they were like, wow, like, they're killing it up there, you know? And then I was in musical theater, and being on stage and hearing a humongous orchestra of people just playing this music that, like, you know, and we did familiar shows like Grease, we did, you know, Little Shop of Horrors, we did Into the Woods, but hearing like these things that you listen to on, you know, Spotify, you listen to the cast recording, but like hearing it in front of you by a band is like, I don't know, and the feeling, you get the feeling like these people are playing their feelings through their body parts, and you can hear that in the music, like you can hear it. And I think it does take longer, you know, it's harder to edit, you know, a guitar line that somebody does. Like, it's really like, Ant will tell you, like, he recorded things, he was like, I need to do it again, I need to do it again, I need to do it again. And like, for me, it was just like, I get it. Like, it needs to be. You want to hear your, like, everything that you got on that thing. And I just, yeah, it's incredible. And it makes me feel like I'm on stage. Like, if I could perform with just a band always, that would be, like, my ideal. Like, and you can mess up. Like, you they're there with you. It's like, follow me. Or, you know, there's just certain elements that you can't get from something that has been, like, previously recorded. So... That was a long-winded answer.
I love long-winded answers, though. It's all good. I want to touch church a little bit because it's so interesting how so many of these musical talents start there and then they sort of find their way, however it is that they best express themselves. So what was that process like for you?
I think it helped me have a creative outlet before I was in like a performing arts high school and stuff like that. You know, me and the Lord's relationship is a little different. You know, mm-hmm. I believe there's a higher being. I don't necessarily, you know, believe necessarily in the Christian God, but I know that there's someone out there doing something, mm-hmm. you know? So that part of the church is, you know, I'm very pretty much detached from, but the musical element and just watching people like feel these things through dancing, through music, through singing, like the choir, like people, so many people have so many influences in the church when it comes to those creative outlets. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you look up to your choir director and it's like, they're leading these humongous choirs sometimes and like all these huge voices and they sound so gorgeous together. And that's like something that like always fascinated me. And gospel music is just on another level. Like, that is something, yeah, that is something that I hold, that I took from the church, and I was like, wow, like, I cannot give this away. Like, mm-hmm, I cannot, like, no. That really uplifts me. Like, hearing people sing gospel music, like, gospel singers, like, they're on another level. So, you know, I think for me, it kind of started out, like, made me really go at it and made me continue, you know? So, yeah.
What age were you at when you said, you know what? I like this. I'm good at it. Let's go. What age was that for you?
I guess different ages. I think I've been singing all my life, and I've been performing all my life. Like, that's something, like, I've always been doing. Like, even when I was in elementary school, like, I did this show at my private school, and they built this stage. Like, I went to an all-black private school. It was lit.
Oh.
Sometimes. But... but they built this whole stage, and, like, I played, like, Lena Horne, and I was, like, in, like, the first grade, and I was just, like, singing, like...
Time out. Your school had you doing Lena Horne in first grade.
Yeah, I was like, what's
Yo,
up?
That is so dope.
Right? And that teacher was really, really cool. He was awesome. But, yeah, like, I was performing all my life, and I think it started when I met my friends in FAO. I'm part of, like, this collective. And, you know, there's Vaughn B. shout outs to him. And he lived with me and was like, yo, I'm a rapper. Like, you know, I was like, oh, cool. Like, I do music too. And he wound up, like, staying with me, and we just, like, worked on music all the time. And then I met Teddy, and, like, I recorded my own music. I recorded with my a cappella group that I was in Fordham, and I was like, oh, recording is awesome. But then when I met Teddy, and I was like, wow, like, this is something, like, I can actually do, like, this song, like, Work It Out has gone to places that I have never seen. Like, people love that song, and hearing, mm-hmm, people talk about how much they love that song, yeah, it really sends me, you know. So yeah, I feel like the age, probably like 19, where I was like, I could be a recording artist. I could be a singer-songwriter and record this shit. Can I curse on this? Record this stuff.
Thank you for the self-edit.
The stuff. Yep.
But what's most interesting is that I feel like people think that this journey is very linear. Like, you say you're going to be a singer-songwriter, you're in a studio by 21. You're selling out shows, ooh, by 26.
It is a cold,
how
cold
much
world.
How much of a lie is that?
It's a cold, cold world out there. It's a lie. It's, you know, there are people who have, you know, done that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everyone's journey is different. And I feel like you have to... There's so much growth to be done when it comes to any creative outlet, you know? And even people who start that early, like, you know, they have this whole, like, arch of, like, the person that they were, like Rihanna, for example. The, mm-hmm, person that she was when she first started at the young, ripe age that she started, you know, now she's a completely, you know, she's grown so much musically, like, all those things. And you can do that out of the spotlight. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can hit the spotlight, or if that's your goal, you know, like, you can reach success and, you know, do all these things, but you can do a lot of things in the background, you know? Like, I feel like I've done a lot of growth musically that, like, people may never hear, you know? And I, you know, sometimes I was like, oh my God, like when I was 16, I was like, oh, like, all these 16-year-olds watching Disney Channel, I was like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, they're on Disney singing it up. We're all in this together. I was tight. When High School Musical came out, I was tight. I was like, yo, I need to be on High School Musical. Like, this is meant to be. But I realize now that it's like, it doesn't matter, you know? It's like, reaching success is reach success, period. It doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter what point you're in. You know, someone else in my collective, Hotel Tells, I'm not going to, like, put his age out there. He's not old at all. But, you know, him and Vaughn B, you know, they're what's considered, like, above the age that, like, people, like, start out and get pop off and stuff like that. But, like, they don't give a shit, you know? Like, I'm sure, like, sometimes they think about it, but, you know, they still are putting it out there. Like, you know, Hotel Tells just put out his album, you know, like, Vaughn B's working on his album. And it's, like, it inspires me because it's like, you know, you didn't stop. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people are like, oh, once you turn whatever age, like, you should just stop. That just means it's over for you. And it's like, nah, like, no. If I still love this, like, you know, and if you're doing it for that, then you shouldn't be doing it. Like, sure, fame, you know, but, like, I wouldn't want to be famous and doing something every day and be forced to do something I don't truly love. Like, oof, you know, like, imagine real. Having to be famous, like, and just doing something that you're like, yeah, I started doing this, but damn, like,
I don't,
you know,
like this no more.
Please, like, please. Yeah. So.
So what does success look like for you?
Success, I just want to be like, I just want to make a living making music and just like.
That's vague. That's mad vague. I'm looking for more.
I'm sorry.
That's mad vague.
I think success for me is, I don't really know what it looks like necessarily. I have it like theoretically in my head. I want to be financially, making money, enough money to be financially comfortable making music. But I also just, I want to live, I think success for me is living a lifestyle where I can make music all the time and have the houses that I want, the be bi-coastal. That's part of my success. Having my family with my boyfriend who I love so much. Having a family with him. He's my best friend. I can't imagine like any of this happening without him, you know, like him being by my side. But like, that's successful to me. And just being able to just live and be me and like,
right.
Yeah, like people are like, oh my God, you're going to be so famous. It's like, that actually like terrifies me. If it comes, it comes. But I love music so much that I just want to be able to perform. And if I never make it out of like some small places in, you know, all over the country or even in New York, but I'm still getting paid enough to do it, you know, and not have to have a day job, then I'm cool with that, you know? But
That's really measured. Because maybe it's just from growing up in this day and age, but it feels like everyone wants to be viral so bad.
And it's so hard. It's so hard, but it's so easy. It's like, because like, virality is something that has really changed people's lives, like, you know, like, and people want that, you know, and it's less about like, oh, I want all these people to see me, but like, looking at, you know, some kid from, I don't even know where he's from, but he fed a deer one day, and now like, look at him, like, he's like, what?
Oh, Brother Nature.
Yes.
That's why I was like, wait, who?
Yeah.
Brother Nature.
Didn't even take you that long. Like, you see, like, he, like, his life has immensely changed just from going viral for something like that. So people see stuff like that happen. They're like, oh, like, that's my goal, you know? For me, it would be nice, you know? But I feel like as a singer, like, you got to do a lot of stuff to be viral. And I just don't have the energy. Like, I don't like singing, like, popular songs. Like, I don't like doing anything that I feel like I'm forced to do. Like, when I was in school, I was like, I loved reading. But summer reading, I was like, screw all these books on this list. I don't like none of them. Like, I'm not reading any of this, you know? But I would, like, read other stuff. And my mom would be like, what's up? Like, you're not reading these books, but you're reading these. My dad's like, I don't know what's happening. And I'm like, I just don't like to be forced to do things. Like, I learned I was forced to take Spanish for mad long. And I retained very little because I was forced to. I had no choice. Had to take Spanish. I was like, if I would have gotten Spanish and French, but I still chose Spanish, I would have been fluent right now, but I was forced to do it. So I feel like you have to, like, a song comes out and, like, you have to, like, do a cover of it, or, like, you have, it's like, nah, I don't want to do any of that.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, like, you know, like, when the Monica Challenge came out and all those things, like, I love them. I love watching them because people be really popping up on those challenges.
Do.
You know, like, people really get to showcase themselves, you know, and that's just not something that's part of me. And I'm very, very, like, I stick to my guns. So I'm very, like, I'm going to sing what I want, you know. And if it doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't go anywhere, you know. But I feel like for me, it's like my music speaks for myself. And even if it doesn't, I mean, just music does go viral, but even if it doesn't go viral, I just want it to get to people. I want people to be able to hear it. I want, you know, I just want it to spread. And I get so surprised when people tell me that they're like, oh, I listened to Work It Out and I've heard Work It Out. Like, I heard Work It Out from this person. It's like someone, it's like 30 degrees away from me, you know, like not even 6 degrees of Tommy's, like 30 degrees. I'm like, oh, I heard this song. And like, so that's the kind of feeling I want for my music. Like, I don't necessarily care if millions of people hear it or see me sing or, you know, it would be cool though. It'd be mad cool, but I don't require it.
See? So not too taxing. It's so interesting when you look at the overall landscape of how things have changed, like musically or even artistically.
Right.
What part, I know you said you don't, you're kind of like nervous about being famous, but is there another part of the whole journey that had you a little bit leery, or is it just the fame that sticks out the most?
Just the fame, but also like, I guess the process is just so like there were definitely points in the process where I was like, forget this whole thing. Like, I need not release an EP. Like, I'm going to go back to my job and live. Like, I knew the music was good, but like, there were lots of times where I felt like very, very discouraged. And I think my fear is like not finishing something or like not having the best team around me that I need to execute something. I think that scares me so much. So much slime stuff goes on in the industry. And I think beyond being famous, it's more like making sure that I keep a good head on my shoulders and that I stick to my guns even when I'm in that type of environment, you know?
Yeah.
It's a scary place out there. Like, and, you know, as a woman, you know, people take advantage of women in the industry. People ignore women in the industry. So I think, I mean, I want to go in there, you know, guns a-blazing, you know, and do what I need to do. But, you know, just making sure that the people around me are really for me and my success and our success and just growing rather than, you know, stabbing each other in the back. I think that's something that I'm like, oh, like, I just need that to be. I just need it to happen. So I think I'm always like fearful of that because I'm very on my P's and Q's. So like to know that someone can like get me right quick.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there a shift in the landscape that you see? I mean, it's nice. I don't know about nice, but the issue of women in the industry being mistreated has sort of finally seen the surface bubbling. Is it enough of a shift for you, or what more would you be looking for?
I think just visibility and literally like treating people with respect, like, you know, the whole Dreamville situation where a lot of journalists, you know, women music journalists, like they still are part of the music industry.
Absolutely.
People would walk right past them and not say anything, or even any woman in the room was like, people legitimately would only address the men in the room. And like, that's something that's like so small, you know what I mean? But it's like, that means you're not, you don't see me. Like, you don't view me as equal to these people or on the same level of these people. I don't want to use the word equal, but like on the same level of these people for you to be able to speak to me, you know? And I think it needs to go further where it's like, why can't women just exist together? You know what I mean? Like, why does it always have to be like, oh, this one or this one? I like this one instead of this one. And it's like, people have all these people in their Spotify playlists. You know, they have Drake and Meek Mill. They have this person and this person. All these beefs happen, but people still consistently listen to all of them. You know, they separate all that nonsense from the music to the point where it's like, there's no question where it's, well, I mean, people are still like, oh, Drake or Meek Mill and stuff, but it's not. I feel like it springs from the beef. There's no like immediate like I'm just sitting here like and someone's like, how do we pit them against each other? Like right now on Twitter it's like trending like who has more sex appeal, like Cardi B or Rihanna? And it's like, why can't they just exist on the same plane as women in the industry? Like, what's good with that? Like, nobody be asking who has more sex appeal for men. Like, we care about that, but who cares about that? You know, like,
I feel like the people who ask those questions, they don't really want to answer, though.
They don't. I feel like they just want to spark, like, you know, but it's the, I feel like, but it goes to places like people, it starts the conversation. Like, even if their intention is not to get an answer, it starts that tension with people, you know? And sometimes it turns into like literal tension for no reason. Like
the whole Cardi B Nicki thing.
Just disrespectful, you know? That was a mess. That was, and you know, I'm sure there was a lot of factors going on with that from behind the scenes and from what we see from the people that we follow.
Of course.
And using, you know, but yeah, it's kind of, it's like, why can't we just be, you know? Why can't we just be ourselves, be women in the industry, and just do our thing? Like, I think we need to pass that. I think it needs, we need to just surpass that.
It's so interesting, I think, because when you look at everything, you realize, at least for me, sort of being a historian, I kind of look back and I was like, yo, women have been everywhere. Like, here's a guilty pleasure of mine, to be real. I think a top 10 song of mine is I'm Every Woman by Chaka Khan.
Yeah.
It's one of the best produced songs ever.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's not even close. I have a feeling I'm going to get clowned for that statement, but I really don't
care. I don't think anyone's going to clown you, and if they
do,
like,
because that means you just
y'all
can't play,
are the problem.
Like, you can't play bass like he does on that track, and I don't really care.
And you can fight me.
Super fact.
Tommy Versailles. That's all I have to say. I will fight for Chaka Khan. Throw hands.
But when you look at looking at just the history of how the evolution has been for women who get involved, like even Tobe Nwigwe, who has exclusively a woman producer, but she's not married to him. He still talks about his wife and his producer in the same realm. I think that sort of lends to what you're talking about two very important figures mm-hmm. being in a place where they can both be recognized mm-hmm. for what they bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. I think it happens. I think it needs to happen more. I think there needs to be more emphasis on the impact that everyone brings to the table.
So let's make you queen of the industry for about a month. What are some moves that you would try to make?
I would definitely eliminate gendered awards. I think that mm-hmm. music is music, and I feel like there are elements of music that there's no reason for it at all. Like, there's no reason for it, you know? Like, I can't, yeah, no. Just needs, I mean, in anything, that needs to be just, like, out of here. But I would have more women in the limelight, more dark-skinned women in the limelight, more,
right.
you know, black women in the limelight. Yeah, and getting there, and even if they're behind the scenes, like, getting their flowers, like, and not in the way where it's like, oh, black women build everybody up, you know? But it needs to be, like, nah, like, they really did the damn thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are people behind the scenes making these incredible tracks, writing these incredible tracks. The performers in the front are performing these tracks beautifully, you know? And I feel like I want everyone to win. And if I was queen of the industry, like, all the women that I see that are, like, and that I don't see, like, I feel like I just want women to win. So I would just put them to the forefront, you know, especially black women. Especially dark-skinned black women, because, like, if we're talking about, like, you know, the ecosystem
the totem,
and the
yeah,
food,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, you know? So I feel like that's what I would want. That's what I would want in the industry. And I would just want people to... And I wouldn't, like, eliminate the men or anything like that, you know, because artists are artists. But I would want to see more... Like, I would want to see a women-saturated industry to the point where it's very, like, that's what people talk about, you know?
That's
what people talk about.
I rock with that. The cool thing about seeing women performers, at least for me, is that it took me a while to find a woman who, let me not fib, I grew up on smooth jazz, mm-hmm. so there were, I'll never forget, there were two women saxophonists. I was like, mm-hmm. you play this, and it's not a joke. Like, I see the videos, and this isn't an industry plant. This is real. Candy Dolfer and Mindy Hebert specifically. So I was already, like, comfortable with it, but it wasn't until I think I saw it was Beyoncé one time.
Yes, yes.
And then it was Janelle Monáe
yes.
another time.
So the Irreplaceable video was like, I was like, what? I was like, they are turning up. Like, all these women are. That made me from then on. I was like, yo, I need all types of women performers in my life.
All female brass band. I'm sitting there like, oh my God. And I'm geeking because the arrangements are pristine.
Yeah, yeah. We're very meticulous. Yeah.
Facts. Super. Facts.
Yeah, like being part of an all women a cappella group was like really dope.
What was your group called?
The Satin Dolls. Shout out to you, ladies.
The Satin Dolls. Yes. You did not take the Duke Ellington song in jail.
Wow.
Did not. But yes, we were on Fordham's campus, Satin Dolls. And we were like the all girl group to the all boys group. But it was really cool, like being around that energy. We were just singing stuff that, like, you know, not that like, oh, a woman wouldn't sing, but it was nice, like singing like Justin Timberlake with 13 ladies and hearing arrangements. Hey. And like, yeah, like, and it was cool. Like, the vibes were really dope. Rehearsing was beautiful. It was nice. Like, I love all men a cappella groups too, just to like see where their voices go, you know. But we just sounded so pretty, you know.
Now I want tape. That sounds bad, though.
I can get some for you. They're out there. They are out there.
Excellent. Do you know, are they still in circulation or did it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Facts.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, you know, there's got to be some sort of sports component to the show.
Tell me more.
You don't look nervous, so this is great. As you know, the Super Bowl just happened. Did you watch it?
No, I actually had an anti-Super Bowl party.
Gang.
And we ate Super Bowl food, so we had, like, chicken wings, mozzarella sticks, mini hot beef patties, you know. We drank, and we watched Blackity Black movies. We watched the blackest Disney movie we could watch, which is The Princess and the Frog. We watched Black Panther, of course. Early in the day, I watched Coming to America. I watched Paris is Burning.
Wow, you had the day.
We had a day. Anti-Super Bowl. And I texted my dad, and my dad asked me, he was like, oh, are you watching the Super Bowl? And I was like, no, Dad. I don't mess with the NFL. And he said, you're right. They all white supremacists. And I was like, I love you, Daddy. My daddy's white. So it was just nice to hear that. It was great. I was like, thanks, Dad. Thank you.
Validation.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was good on the band all of last year. This season, I slipped a little bit, partly because I'd get back from work and mm-hmm. there's nothing else on. So it's like, whatever.
Right.
And I watched both championship games. I'm not even going to hold you. And I watched the whole Super Bowl, too, but I was burning the whole time. Because when I tell you what's finna happen, you might actually be like, wow, that's crazy. So, you know, the teams run out into the field. It's about 6:26. I think by this time, Gladys Knight had already sung the anthem. She did a beautiful job, by the way. One of the best singers of our generation.
True.
We know that there was controversy about her even doing the anthem in the first place, but whatever. Then the camera fades out, and the NFL plays this commercial talking about the NFL is so committed to engineering change in communities, and we were proud to come down to the home of the civil rights movement in Atlanta.
No, they didn't.
Our game.
No, they did not.
I couldn't make it up if
no,
I tried.
No, they did not.
I couldn't make it up if I tried. And at the coin toss, they had Reverend Dr. Bernice King.
Wow, they were really out here. They were like, we heard y'all boycotting.
They had Senator John Lewis there, and I forget who else they had there. And I'm not even mad at them for being there. I was pissed that the NFL.
They were like, we gotta get them. Yeah, they were like.
They used this to pat themselves on the back.
Yeah, they definitely did. They were like, so we hear black people are boycotting. How can we get them to watch? And they all sat in an office and, like, people were just like, And they just started listing all the black people they could possibly get. Like, they were like, who? Chloe and Halle. Yeah. I like those girls. Like, you know, like, I feel like it was, like, pandering to the max. Like, and, you know, like, I'm not, you know, representation, cool. But like, it's like, yeah, and then don't, but then don't turn around and say, look, look what we did for you. Looky here, black people, look what we did.
So like, come watch our games,
right,
please.
They were like, you got us? You got us next season? And we're like, no. Like, I didn't know any of that happened.
I was so mad. I was so mad. The fact that, as a native New Yorker, the fact that Tom Brady won again.
I also, I was about to note that I'm also an avid Patriot hater. So
one time for the one time.
One time for the one time. I hope you like drop like boom. Like, does Joe Budden like own that sound?
I feel like he does. And I don't often go through, so I'll just do boom.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah. I'm an avid patient. So even I was like, good. I'm good.
Exactly. But the fact that they did all of that just made me go, we can't be friends. Not forget right now, because I know we saw all the arguments about Colin Kaepernick, and it continues to come up because I find it disgustingly ironic. And it's been said before. This isn't new. But how are you going to come down, spend – by the way, that video didn't come out just for that one time for the commercial. Of course, it played it countless times throughout the broadcast, including Jim Nantz, one of the best broadcasters in the business, talking over a video montage of the NFL having meetings in the community with Roger Goodell in a black church with other players talking about how can we help mend the community. I'm sitting there like, the dude that you needed, you won't let play.
Awful.
And to get into the sports part about this, all right, I'm going to try and use, I know you know football enough.
Enough.
So I'm going to try and use this analogy.
Tell me more.
Let's say, I want to pick a proper tier here. Let's say that Jennifer Hudson came out for a stand and just said, this is wrong. Don't book me for events like this anymore. Okay? She's not Beyonce. She's not Rihanna, even in terms of clout, but she's respected. She went on American Idol. She's won awards, all that sort of stuff. Then you try to book an event with, like, the best belters of all time. And you know Jennifer Hudson should be on the list. But you don't call her. Do you know what you do? You call Aretha Franklin's granddaughter. That's what the NFL did this season. Granted, I do not know if Aretha Franklin's granddaughter can sing, but they didn't call Aretha. They went all the way to the greatest depths to pull up a glimpse of somebody, trot them out as respectable to say, hey, this will do. But it won't. That's what I felt when Mark Sanchez, butt fumble, got another chance to start. Josh Johnson, who hadn't started an NFL game since I was in college, got a chance to start. They were pulling in old college quarterbacks. There were AFL quarterbacks. Vinny Testaverde 2 years ago got a phone call. And he hasn't played since I was a teenager. And yet you want to sit here and tell me that a guy who has a playoff record and went to two NFC championship games is not fit for your system.
And that's my thing. If you read all of these, like the comments, you know, and they're just like, Kaepernick wasn't even a good player. And I'm like, yeah, but even if he wasn't, look at all the players who are not good players. Like, so, I don't know. Like, it was, yeah, it's a whole mess. It's a mess. And there's nothing that they can say to
to erase that.
Right. It's like, like, you just, they cut it open. They were like, here's some, like, we're going to pour some candle wax in it. We're going to spit in it, give you tetanus. We're going to put a rusty nail in it. And then we're going to sew it up.
And we're going to douse it in a little bit of Henny to see if you don't feel the pain.
Right. Then we're going to sew it up and put a skin-colored Band-Aid on it that were specially made for you and be like, voila, is this okay? No, it's not okay. There's still tetanus, spit, and candle wax in my leg. Like, so yeah, it was, yeah. They really dropped the ball on that one. Really, no pun intended.
And they really tried it. So I just, it's weird because I feel like if he even does get another chance to play again, it still wouldn't feel like enough.
No, and
that's what, because you robbed them of 2 years,
right?
And nobody wants to admit it,
right? I agree. Yeah, I feel like it. Yeah, I feel like he wouldn't, and I also feel like he's beyond that now. He is.
How crazy! They wanted to make him disappear, and now you can't get rid of him.
Can't get rid of him.
This is supposed to be the biggest week in your sport, and everyone's talking about the NBA. That was so much fun.
That's beautiful. That's what I like to hear.
they really got overshadowed by the fact that Anthony Davis might get traded. None of that really matters because the Knicks broke my heart again. So
they break our hearts all the time, but it's okay. I feel like New York has a very strong, like, people talk so much about, like, New York teams, but it's like, you can't get this heart. You can't get this
That's
heart nowhere
true.
Else.
That's true.
This builds a better heart. Okay. Builds a better heart. I am an avid Rangers fan. Like,
watch hockey?
I love hockey.
Hey!
One of my first words were Messier shoot score. So yeah, I have a ton of Rangers jerseys. Yeah, I'm a super Rangers fan. So not winning a cup since before the year I was born is heartbreaking. And watching them fumble the bag every time they fumble the bag, it's heartbreaking. But I will never, there's not another hockey game that is like a Rangers game. Like,
see, this is, I got two hockey stories for you.
Tell me.
So the first, being a native Long Islander, I'm still a Rangers fan.
Ooh.
Been since forever.
See, take note, the rest of y'all. Okay?
And the thing is, as a native Long Islander, I still have that sense of pride when it came to the Islanders. Not because I had any sort of affection, but just because they were being taken away because politics.
And that's true.
And them losing that team the way they did was disgraceful.
It was.
So then they go to Brooklyn, which is fine. Then they say they're going to rebuild the Coliseum, which, again, is also fine because, you know, it's a live music venue, mm-hmm, or whatever else. When I tell you how vexed I was when I was looking up the specs, you know, the Coliseum was finished. It was beautiful. It reopened. I'm like, okay, so the Islanders should come back. A lot of seasoned Isles fans are saying, nope, it's impossible now. And they're really mad. I'm like, but it's new. Why are you mad? They said, look at the regulations. So the new NHL regulations say that, and this is coming off the top of my head, but any new arena has to hold at least 15,500 people in order to be the permanent home for an NHL team.
Wow.
The new Coliseum holds 13 grand.
Wow. They were like, dub. A dub a dub. They were like, we lost you and don't want you back. Like,
and the same company that owns the Nets owns the new Nassau Coliseum, and it is the home for their G League, aka minor league basketball franchise.
Wow. Wow. They must be sick. They must be in Brooklyn like,
and the Islanders fans hate Brooklyn. I've gone to a couple of hockey games at Barclays Center.
They're awful.
I can see why they don't like it.
But I mean, even at the Coliseum, I've been to one Islanders game. It's like,
it's cool, but it's not the barn.
Right.
The barn was crazy.
That's true.
The barn would shake.
Yeah.
And all you had to do was just, and then they're going to go and build on Belmont. The same company. I'm not even going to hold you business-wise. That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. But the Islanders suffered for it. You know what? I feel like Islanders are like the little brothers where it's like, I can make fun of them, but you can't make fun of them. Like,
the
I don't want to
hear. The irony is they still have more Stanley Cups.
That is, but that guess hurts. What?
And they won four straight. They actually had an era, which makes me sad.
It did, but that's okay because the Rangers are the Rangers.
Yeah,
that's some diehard like fandom right there. They're like, you can't tell me nothing. Don't tell me nothing. Fact. Yeah, I used to. Yeah, I was reckless. Like I would yell at people. Like there was one game where like every time I went to the bathroom, they scored. So people were in the stands like, go to the bathroom. People started buying me like soda and stuff. No, they didn't. But they were definitely yelling. They were definitely like, go to the bathroom. Like, we see what you're doing here. We see this work. Yeah, the Rangers are the loves of my lives. And yeah, I think there's no, like, being at a Rangers game is like intense, especially a Rangers Devils game.
Oh my gosh.
Physical altercations everywhere. In the stands. In the bathrooms.
Hockey. I get that you had Marty Brodeur. Yes, you won your chips. But go back to Newark.
Yeah.
And leave the garden alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, come on. And then you have the audacity. Devils fans will be the first ones coming up talking about, oh, I'm from New York.
The worst.
Bruh.
The worst.
Go back on the Garden State.
And get out of here.
Like you cool when we need a quick getaway from the hustle and bustle, but it's still ours. Like, go away.
I will tell you, it is really weird, you know, not standing for the national anthem at a hockey game, because you know what that crowd looked like. So I'm putting my life on the line.
I can't even lie. I held the protest down for about 7 months. And then after that, it was just like...
Yeah, they are aggressive. They are abusive. Like, yeah, they're pretty abusive. And I'm light-skinned, so I'm pretty sure, like, your experience is, like, a million times worse.
Because
like,
I'm already big. People already want to fight. I'm just like, you know what?
Yeah, like... Yeah, that's really fighting the good fight. Get going to an MSG game and not standing.
When was the last Rangers game that you went to?
Oh my God, it's been too long. Maybe about a year and a half ago.
That's not too terrible.
Yeah, but I'm used to like going so much. Like going so much that like the people at MSG are like, are you a season holder? And I'm like, nah, I just love the Rangers. Like, nah, I don't.
And I bet you they try to baby talk you like, oh, you see, that's why there are only five guys on the ice. The sixth person is the goalie. And you look at them like.
You know, I've never had that happen.
Really?
I've never been disrespected that.
What? Okay, MSG.
Right?
Okay, MSG.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, MSG. Yeah. That's what's up. No. Y'all did my Liberty wrong, but you know what I'm saying?
I feel like they're like, the MSG workers are like mad happy because they don't see a lot of black people at the events. They're like, yo, you come here all the time? It's lit. Like, you know, like, even the white MSG workers are like, damn, son. Like, these games are stressful. Drunk melanin deficient people are they're reckless. So I could just imagine why they feel so uplifted when they see black people at a hockey event. So
and it's crazy because there's a lot of history for black people behind hockey as well. Ray Emery unfortunately had just passed away, but Kevin Weeks is still around. Like you still see some of these names. P.K. Subban, even. That boy was nice. When Montreal traded him, I'm like, I hope y'all never win again.
Right. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
They did the hometown boy so dirty. How could you do that to your man? It was so bad that when they traded him and he still said he would financially support. How do you make a whole children's hospital cry? That's gotta be some sort of record for worst management decision ever.
I agree.
Like, come on.
I agree. Heard that, Montreal. You heard.
And I'm still coming to see your beautiful city for my homie's bachelor party. So
I won't be at the bachelor party, but I'm coming. I'm coming for another reason.
Heard you. I do have to give you my second Ranger story, which ended in heartbreak before we go here.
No.
It was in 2014.
Okay.
I was in North Carolina broadcasting baseball. It was a tough summer, but still a cool experience. I was staying at the house of somebody who was also a Rangers fan.
Okay.
And we were both watching. It was game six in LA. When I tell you.
Don't remind me.
That game winner hit. And that was, I think that was the first time I had my heart broken on the road into pieces. I just went back to my room. I didn't even cry. I didn't punch the
You can't
bed.
Do anything.
I was just like.
Like, you just so wow. dumb. You just get so dumb.
Funny how LA can beat New York, but can't ever seem to beat Boston at anything. Ooh, ever.
Dad.
Baseball, football. Next, UCLA is going to play BC, and BC is going to kick them to the curb. And for all of my college football fans, that should be your ouch, really, face. Because, wow. Wow, 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 wow.
Yeah, it's disrespectful.
It is. Before we go, and I make the people tell you who you are and how they can find you, I'm pretty sure you probably have a Messier jersey.
Of course.
You're not allowed to pick Messier. You're not allowed to pick King Henrik. Your favorite Rangers jersey in the arsenal.
Ooh. Ooh. I don't know.
I have a lot of custom jerseys. Do tell.
So I had a friend who works at the NFL store. And so I would always go in there and get custom jerseys made. So I had
the NHL store. Bingo.
Yes, the NHL store. My bad. And we were just talking so much about the NFL. But yeah, so he worked at the NHL store, so I got a bunch of jerseys made. So my favorite jersey would have to be my Blackhawks jersey that has my last name on it.
Whoa.
Or my Mighty Ducks jersey that was a gift, and it had my hockey number on it, and it says Tommy Boy on it.
That is dope.
Which was the same. That's what was on my jersey when I played hockey. So, yeah.
See, now I have to ask a couple more questions. How long did you play hockey for?
I played for 3 years. I was a goalie. It was ice hockey.
Ooh, this teenage years or slightly younger?
Teenagers. I was like 13. I was like 12, 13.
So you're on an ice hockey team. I tried skate. Now, I've skated before, and that's when I realized hockey players are a different breed and they don't get paid enough because, wow.
And the equipment is so heavy. I was a goalie, but even like regular equipment is just heavy. Like, so yeah, it takes a lot.
Do we have a signature Tommy Vercei moment in goal?
A signature Tommy Vercei moment?
Or one where you at least realized, I like this game.
I think when I don't know. I think, my godfather's the reason I even got into hockey, godfather Paulie, because he's a huge Rangers fan also. And I think he took me to a game, and I was like, I just love the energy of the crowd. I was like, they're fighting each other in this game? It's lit. Like, I was like, wow, I get to watch white men fight each other, like, really beat the crap out of each other. I like this game. Like, and I think just the, you know, being from a city where the team is part of the original six, like, you don't get that type of love from people, like just seeing like people who have been a fan since, you know, like, oh, they've held season seats since the 50s and like wild, like, you know,
wow,
you know, just think that like we had Dancing Granny. I don't know if she passed away or not. I hope she's okay. Like, you know, we had Dancing Granny, we have Dancing Larry, like just those things that have caught on and become part of MSG. And like, MSG is the best. The MSG is the end all be all. I think just being in the atmosphere, I was like, wow, I like this. And then I just kept going. Like, we just kept going so much. And I think because it was a bonding moment with my godfather, like, we were really close. Like, he's the reason why I got into wrestling. He's the reason why I got into, like, a lot of sports. So that bonding moment and just, like, things that happen, like, the moments I'll never forget. So, yeah, I feel like being part of that kind of community is really cool. And I also like people's reactions when I'm like, yeah, I play it. I love hockey. People are like, hockey? Soulja Boy face. They're like, hockey. Like, I'm like, yes. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. Tell the people, not just when the record is dropping, rough date or whatever, but tell the people where to find you.
Okay. So, my EP, The Broken Palace EP, will be dropping March 1st.
You heard.
You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook. And what else is this under? Yeah, Instagram and Facebook. I am at Tommy Versailles Music. It's Tommy like Tommy Pickles. Versailles, like the Palace of Versailles. That's V-E-R-S-A-I-L-L-E-S-E-S. Music. Both on Instagram and Facebook. And then on Spotify and all that, I'm just under Tommy Versailles. And if you follow me, I'll have links up to my website, which is launching on the 28th. And you can start pre-ordering vinyls, t-shirts, all those things.
Vinyls.
Yeah.
I have a vinyl player. This is happening.
It's going to be lit. So, yeah, thanks for having me, Unkwah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and have, like, talked about all of this.
I'm telling you.
I didn't know what to expect, but I was like, I didn't expect anything bad, but, like, it's not that my expectations were low. I was like, this is going to be fun, but, like, I didn't know what to expect, but, like, you're so cool. Your vibe's so cool.
I appreciate it.
I hope to come back after my EP has launched.
Absolutely.
I would really like to come back when, you know, hopefully, like, I be getting somewhere and I'm like, yo, what's up? I'm back. Back on the track,
it's
you
like,
know?
It's like, yo, so I just got back from my first world tour. and
that would be awesome.
You got a minute?
Thank you for speaking that into existence.
Of course. That's so important. And God willing, it's going to be a live show, too.
Yes!
Make sure you keep up with your boy. I can't believe I just said that, but it feels natural, so I'm gonna try it again. Make sure you keep up with your boy on Instagram, _ sometimes JR, on the Twitter, N_ ASONYE. Facebook, you can't have, but literally just search the name. It'll pop up right there. In My Bag, every other Friday on Apple Podcasts, on Anchor, and on Spotify. For the beautiful Tommy Versailles, thank you once again for joining us. See you in 2 Fridays. Peace.